The Spinoff Podcast Network. Skinny are helping you show how smart you are with the 1Q Quiz, an all-new, super challenging and super quick daily quiz built by The Spinoff. Every Monday, Skinny are giving you the chance to prove you're smart with the Skinny Extra Credit question. Get it right, and you'll get the chance to score yourself some Skinny Extra mobile credit so you can text, call, or even video call your group chat and gloat about how big your brain is. T's and C's apply.
The Fold is brought to you by oOh!media, making brands unmissable and public spaces better across Aotearoa. Nau mai, hoki mai ki a The Fold, e mihi nei, ko Duncan Grieve tōku wangoa. My guest today is Glenn Kine, who is the Senior Vice President and Head of Networks for Warner Brothers Discovery for Australia, New Zealand, and Japan. That is a long-ass job title for what is a big-ass job. Glenn took over running the, you know, Three was the core of this company in a local sense, and it was divorced from MediaWorks a couple of years ago and then bought by Discovery, and then that Discovery merged with Warner Brothers to create this, what is now one of, if not the biggest media company in the world. And he has the job of running it for three territories. He's a New Zealander and runs it from New Zealand, but it's a big and complex thing. But as he points out, New Zealand, while being the smallest of the three territories that he oversees, it's also probably the most diversified and one of the most diversified territories that Discovery has, Warner Brothers Discovery has. Sorry, I always get corrected on that, and rightly so, anywhere in the world. And as a result, you can kind of, in a microcosm, see how the different parts of the business are performing and test and learn things as a result. I've known Glenn for a few years now since we worked together on the Spinoff TV some years ago, and I've always found him a very kind, curious, super thoughtful executive, and I think that this conversation bears that out. So we talk about the local television market, how linear is behaving and evolving, how streaming is sort of impacting that market and interacting with the sort of, you know, how Warner Brothers Discovery's business is interacting with the downturn in streaming globally and with the big technology companies that are also functionally in a similar kind of streaming entertainment space, albeit with zero content costs. So we talk about that. We talk about, honestly, a whole lot about reality television, about the RNZ-TVNZ merger, which honestly could be dead by the time you hear this, about the sort of breakup with MediaWorks and how all that's sitting. It's, I think, a really fun conversation, a good way to sort of set the table for how the whole streaming and television world is going to play out in 2023. Enjoy. This is Glenn Kine from Warner Brothers Discovery on The Fold. Tēnā koe, Glenn Kine, and welcome to The Fold.
Kia ora, Duncan. Thank you for having me.
So when I first met you, I think you ran commercial for New Zealand. Not a small job, you know, not a low-stress job, but certainly nothing compared to your new role, which now doesn't just encompass running Warner Brothers Discovery for New Zealand, but also Australia and Japan, which my research should suggest are actually much larger countries than this one. How did all this happen?
I'm not sure. Look, we went through, as you know, I think we last talked, I think we just completed the merger of Discovery at the time, and then, of course, you know, Warner Brothers deal turned up with Discovery, and that merger kicked off from April last year. So I found myself quickly after that in charge of the networks business across Australia, New Zealand, and Japan. And you're right, Japan is, you know, the third largest media market in the world. It's enormous. And Australia is a fairly sizable, you know, media market as well. And so for me, you know, absolute privilege to have experience in those markets. And the benefit of seeing how other markets operate and the players turn up and you know, how we might benefit from that here in New Zealand as well.
So, I mean, how does it actually sort of physically work? Because they're, along with a different scale, they're also a long way away from one another, particularly Japan. Like, how do you sort of manage it? You based here, or like it doesn't make any sense to me, if I'm honest.
I feel like I'm based on an Air New Zealand flight quite a bit. So certainly, look, home is Auckland. My family are here, and we're committed to that. You know, I've got teenage children, and so Auckland is very much home. I spend a lot of time depending on the needs of the different businesses to be where I need to be. So, often in Japan, I'm off there in a couple of weeks' time, actually, for 2 weeks. Next week, I'm off to Australia for the best part of a week. And so there are always different needs of the various businesses. And so, look, my goal was just to try and be where I need to be at any given time. I'm actually very fortunate in New Zealand. You know, we have obviously the free-to-air business is hungry. You know, it's got a lot of moving parts to it all the time. But I'm very fortunate that we've built, I think, really strong muscle memory in the leadership team over the last couple of years. And so that business runs really effectively and the team get me engaged if I am overseas. The nice thing is that Japan, the time zone's not too bad, 3 to 4 hours, and Australia's only a couple of hours. And so it does mean that, you know, over the course of a day, you can get a lot done in normal business hours. But equally, you know, my days are different from most people. I do find myself on calls in the evenings, dealing with the UK and the different time zones to make it all work. I think also post-pandemic, Warner Brothers Discovery has become very comfortable in running a multi sort of territory global communication model, you know, using all the tools at their disposal. And so that works really effectively.
And so Warner Brothers Discovery, I think, is it the second, it's certainly one of the largest media companies in the world, but compared to like a Disney, for example, which has a real, you know, has been built in this very kind of strategic way over decades, there's not as much kind of obvious thematic cohesion to the assets under control. How do you sort of go about kind of welding them together, or is there like consolidation coming, or like what is the process by which those sort of disparate brands are going to cohere into something which has a logic to it?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, obviously Discovery had its own history of how it came together, and then Warner's, you know, there's been a lot written obviously about its history and different ownership structures. And so first of all, bringing those assets together, I think it depends which metric you look at, you know, whether it's revenue, audience, or different things, but we're either number one or two globally with the range of franchises that are available in the world, and just the depth and breadth of presence around the world, which is quite unique and different. So look, the way we organize the business to try and simplify that to some degree is, you know, we have a streaming business that is largely US-centric at the moment, but with global ambition. We do exist, obviously, from a streaming point of view in a number of markets around the world. We have the networks business, which is, channels, pay TV partners, affiliate partners, a number of free-to-air businesses around the world. And then we have effectively our studios business, which is, often what people are very familiar with, you know, whether it be HBO or the DC Universe or those things. So where a lot of the content output generates from. So we try to structure the business along those three lines. I think it will probably be a work in progress. You know, it was only 9 months ago that the merger happened. And so we think this is the right model right now, but we'll evolve over time if we need to.
Do you think that, you know, for most of the rest of the streamers, there has been a strong period of basically hauling their rights back in-house and that being their sort of USP when it comes to their audience, whereas, you know, WBDs are quite atomized at the moment. You know, you've got HBO, which has got a strong association with Sky, CNN, which is kind of a brand unto itself, the Discovery Plus brand, the Discovery brand full stop, is not as prominent here as the global scale of the company would suggest. And Warner Brothers makes a bunch of shows for TVNZ, for example. Like, Do you foresee over time that those things will come together a bit more, or is it always going to be a bit of a wholesale retail operation in some respects?
I think there will always be an element of being a wholesale operation, and I think the last year has been quite instructive globally in what's happened in the streaming world. You know, you're well familiar, you've reported and talked about it, you know, what happened when Netflix and their Q2 earnings result last year, right? They had a downturn for the first time in terms of their subscriber numbers and what that meant for them financially. And you saw a reaction actually around the world with Disney coming out with, you know, their own sets of challenges. And at the time, that news was happening is exactly when the merger between Warner Brothers and Discovery was happening. And so the company at the time, I think that streaming is not all in for all ends. You know, we have to be diversified in the business model and put our content where we think we can do the best job for the audience and then get a return, obviously, on that content. And so I think there will always be an element of having a wholesale role in the market. And globally now we talk about what we call windows. And so, you know, the window of who gets the content first, who gets it second, third, et cetera. And so streaming will continue to play an incredibly important role in that, because that will, you know, over the long term become the home of, you know, our content, where, you know, as a consumer, you should expect that you can go there and source Warner Brothers content. But equally, our partners are going to be incredibly important for us as we think about the windows of how we give them access.
In terms of, you know, that year in streaming, like it was for a long time, both from a, you know, like a Wall Street or an investor perspective, it was seen as, you know, this thing that could almost only possibly go up. And then just at the time, as you consolidate into, you know, the merged entity, as you say, that was when the sort of sentiment changed. And at the same time, interest rates started to go up. You're quite an indebted company at the present. What was, you know, how did that kind of manifest internally? How was everyone feeling as the, you know, the fever broke at a time when, you know, you kind of almost could have done with another year or two of that running?
Yeah, well, it was a reality check, right? Everyone had to kind of deal with and pivot on strategy pretty quickly. And I think that, you know, we were certainly, you know, in my remit, my part of the world, you know, reasonably lucky. You know, we had spent a year or two building the free-to-air business and, you know, post the initial sale to Discovery, strengthening that as much as it could. So that was on a trajectory and that we were able just to continue doing that. And certainly it brought us closer with our partners in Australia and New Zealand to figure out how to, you know, continue to work with them. And so for us, there wasn't necessarily a lot of change. It was sort of a deepening of what we currently do in the market, but then thinking in the future about how we bring streaming into Australia and New Zealand. And, you know, the big priority for us domestically was 3Now, and I'm sure we'll talk more about that, with an eye to bringing in a paid streaming product. And what we knew to make our streaming world work, our traditional business had to be as strong as it possibly could, because the stronger that business is, the more we can funnel audience through to that streaming, but with those streaming products into the future. So globally, a lot of pivot. I wouldn't say a lot of change here. Clearly, we went through some changes where we brought, you know, disparate organisations together to operate as one business in Australia and New Zealand. But in New Zealand, you know, that had little effect. Yeah.
One of the things that's kind of characteristic of Warner Brothers Discovery is there's a lot of different brands, and they've all got they're amazing brands. Like, let's be honest, but brands like at CNN and HBO, Discovery and so on have like a pretty incredible kind of weight to them. But there are a lot of them. Is there any sense that, you know, Three, which is obviously a brand that has got huge consequence in the New Zealand market, but might not necessarily, you know, if you were looking to consolidate or unify around a singular brand, which seems to be Discovery internationally, is there any chance that, for example, that might become the hero brand and in the local market, or are you pretty married to Three as the big local representation?
a deep commitment and long-term marriage to three would be the answer to that. I think three, you know, has a really wonderful and I think unique place in the market here, really important place, particularly when we think about the news product and a lot of the entertainment content that's originated out of three over the years. So we think that's hugely important. No ambition to change that whatsoever. We think that the rest of the brands can supplement themselves within the three environment in some way over time. And actually, the business here is, I think, more recognized globally than what perhaps people might think sitting here. There are two businesses in the global Warner Brothers Discovery, or two territories, I should say, in the Warner Brothers Discovery universe that are really interesting. New Zealand being one of them. And Poland being the other. Not necessarily a lot of similarities between the two territories, but the reason they're interesting is that we operate at scale in both territories at most segments in the market. So what I mean by that is, you know, we've got a free-to-air business, we've got partnerships with Sky, we've got a BVOD product. We're operating in the licensing business. We originate content that we sell overseas. And so we operate in multiple segments here, which is really interesting, as does Poland. And, you know, the one segment, obviously, that we're not in yet is paid streaming, but, you know, that will come.
How far away?
No announcements, Duncan, other than that will come. I think the... the priority is in the US this summer, or the US summer, and what's happening there is the convergence between the legacy Discovery Plus product and the HBO Max product coming together as a single platform and a single offering. So that'll start in the US and then start to roll through the world. And I'm sure I'll be here talking again about that at some point.
Look forward to that. So yeah. with that linear product, you know, I sort of. The ratings aren't particularly public in New Zealand in the way that they are in other markets, and I know that ratings versus share can be a contentious issue. I've had conversations with Karina, who's over in the corner, your head of corporate comms, on that. But by any measure, the total amount of the linear television audience is shrinking relatively rapidly, though, you know, and I think this is fair to say that news for both, you know, 3/News Hub and for TVNZ is relatively strong. Like it's not declining by the same to the same extent. And obviously, like Discovery has a big digital business, and there is a kind of an AVOD and an SVOD future out there, but. You know, at what point in a small market, given that there are some quite high structural fixed costs to running linear, does it become uneconomic? Or to put it another way, how much longer is running those sort of that variety of businesses going to be to make economic sense for a company like the Warner Brothers Discovery?
Yeah, I mean, it's fair to say with those trends, I mean, they're not new trends, they've been happening for a while. And so, you know, our number one priority for the free-to-air business in New Zealand is to become a digital-first organisation, right? And there's a couple of interesting things that have happened, I think, over the last couple of years. So first of all, you know, you talk about the economics. We've seen in the last couple of years, and this year will be, I think, a tough advertising sector, which I'm sure we'll talk about. But in the last couple of years, we've seen that the revenues generated on the digital platforms have actually met or surpassed the decline of revenues on the linear platforms. And that's been a really good thing in terms of the transition and making that transition a lot easier and giving a lot of confidence to actually increase investment in the three now type platforms. So that's been really good. Secondly, we've seen in our business a huge shift in the way platforms like three now are used. So we've had, you know, over 500,000 new registrations in the last 12 months. We've had a huge increase, about 65% in streaming. But when you look into the consumption, live streaming is up over 150%. So we're seeing now this replacement on the screen of a linear analog where people aren't even plugging in the cord anymore. And they're going straight now to live streaming on the 3Now app. And so this replacement that is now happening, I think, at mass adoption and mass scale is happening, which is actually really good for us. And it gives us, you know, accelerated benefits of being in that digital economy in terms of being able to trade. And so that's looking really positive for the outlook of the business. And, you know, the more we can do to accelerate that, we're very focused on doing that.
I mean, and I I understand that scale of adoption. It's always the caveat that they're coming from a relatively low base by comparison to what the linear scale audiences were. The thing which I sort of, I don't quite understand. I mean, and this has always been the case with media, right? Like everyone has got a lovely story to tell you about their audience, both the scale and the quality of it. That's us. That's everyone in every market. No one is going to say, yeah, our audience is quite small and just a bit bad, but we'd still love to sell you some ads. That's the nature of these businesses. But what I don't quite understand is how, you know, given that so much audience has gone to UGC platforms, you know, the likes of YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, and even some on Facebook still, that is there a scale business built around advertising, given the immense content costs that are held by a company like Warner Brothers Discovery versus the zero content cost in the balance of the advertising market that is UGC driven?
I think so. First of all, you know, part of that transition of audience has also come across to our digital platforms, right, and is accelerating right now. So, you know, we're a net beneficiary of that shift right now. I think also that you know, we, you know, you talk about the business as being the transition from legacy to digital and the economics of that working. We think about the economics of our total business and how it works, right? So how do we look at the market like New Zealand and make sure that, back to your early question, you know, we might have content investments that may not make sense because we can't get a return on free-to-air, but it makes absolute sense that we work with Sky to make sure that their content is apparent there. So we look at the total content mix of the market to make sure that the economics do work. And that gives us, you know, a great deal of confidence actually to think about, you know, participating in these different segments at scale for the long term. So we feel pretty good about that. In terms of those other digital platforms, you're right, you know, they have a really unique advantage, don't they? There is no cost to the content. And I know that's a pet topic of yours that you talk often about. You're right, that's a challenge globally, right, for every major content creator. But what we do see is huge, huge fan bases for a lot of our output. You know, if I, you know, HBO just celebrated 50 years, you know, that is a go-to brand that is recognized around the world as, you know, the best at premium scripted drama. You know, CNN, as you said, you know, that's a global powerhouse in terms of news. And I think the more we can emphasize the power of those brands in the market, they will find an audience and they get great talkability amongst those super fans. We've got to keep on doing that. And we have to think about those social networks around how they form an ecosystem where we can extend into those environments to pull audience back. And that is the fundamental way we do think about those platforms, as much as they are a competitor and have a different operating model, they can also be beneficiary, you know, we can be a net beneficiary of working with them as well.
The Fold is brought to you by oMedia, making brands unmissable and public spaces better across Aotearoa, with over 4,000 out-of-home advertising sites nationwide across both street furniture and retail centres. I'm super grateful to oMedia for enabling us to make unmissable connections with Kiwis.
Raising capital or taking your business to the world? Investment Fix has the lowdown on everything you need to make it happen. This season, we're exploring the US market, the opportunities it offers, what it takes to grow a business there, and the best way to approach investors. Join some of the superstars of the investment and business world as they share advice from their time in the US so you can make your mahi count in this massive market. The Investment Fix podcast, brought to you by Invest New Zealand. Tune in today.
Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today.
What's your perspective, and slight pivot, but the government recently announced a desire to legislate Google and Facebook to start with, but with an opening for other technology platforms that deploy that kind of approach to, so that they might fairly compensate news producers for basically for the reuse of their content. And I must say, I don't know whether this is just the way I've trained the algo, but I see a lot of, for example, Ryan Bridge clips repurposed on TikTok, like little cut downs. They're never coming from Three. They're user generated. Obviously, he's got a big fan base, but it sort of strikes me that, you know, this is content. You know, like TikTok's famously struck a deal with the music industry to revenue share with them. This content, which is, you know, monetized by advertising, set against it, I can only assume that has no flow on benefits beyond a little bit of brand to Three. What was your perspective on that announcement by Willie Jackson late last year? And, you know, do you think that there is ultimately a case for a similar kind of revenue sharing going not just from audio but into the video space for that kind of remix culture, UGC usage of your content?
Yeah, I think any content creator in any context, right, wants to ensure that they're being monetized for where their content turns up, you know, as a basic principle, and we're no different. So, you know, we have a significant investment in the news ecosystem here in New Zealand. You know, we employ over 200 people. We make a significant output commitment, both on linear free-to-air and digitally. And so, you know, if that content's being utilized, you know, we'd like to be monetized by those platforms for using it, where they are getting an additional benefit with their audience engagement. And so we were pleased to see that the legislation, or the proposed legislation, is going to be tabled. We look forward to seeing what that legislation looks like at some stage soon, hopefully. And I think that, you know, there's been a level of, I guess, frustration, I guess, is one word, over the last 12 months that, you know, we haven't been able to move more seamlessly towards getting agreement with some of the globals on the news commercial arrangements. I think, you know, personally, I think it's slightly frustrating. We haven't been able to be more aligned as an industry, and we've had breakout players do their own thing. And I think, you know, if there was one cause to bring us together under commonality for common good in New Zealand, this was certainly one of them. But I certainly hope that, you know, all media players get a positive outcome in the next 6 to 9 months, with a view that this legislation provides a backstop for people.
When you say breakout players do their own thing, do you mean the likes of TVNZ and RNZ signing direct deals, or do you mean the MPA not broadening the tent to include more different types of media organisation?
I think both. I mean, one happened as a result of the other, I think.
Absolutely.
But I think, you know, starting, you know, with the MPA decision, you know, the fact that we couldn't all be together and certainly some were ruled out, I think, was slightly frustrating. And I think missed a very important point.
Strongly endorse that opinion, for the record.
Yeah.
Sort of another related issue is obviously the merger, and as we record this right now, it remains nominally on the agenda. In fact, I think the actual final legislation may have been delivered in the last day or two,
right?
And yet it remains like either the first or the second item discussed in terms of being likely to be jettisoned under a new Hipkin Sipiluni regime. You know, what do you think the best? I mean, obviously we both made submissions. I've read yours on the initial bill itself, but let's assume for argument's sake that it doesn't go ahead. What do you think that will ultimately be a good outcome for New Zealand, and what do you think would be an appropriate sort of vehicle to replace it, if any?
Yeah, I mean, they're such interesting questions today compared to this time last week, because the landscape, as you say, is just so dramatically changed. And, you know, we certainly wait to see, you know, a reshuffle of cabinet and then policy announcements that will flow from there. Interesting you say, by the way, that the legislation you think has been tabled in the last 24 hours. We knew this was the week, but we assumed that may have been shelved for a week or two. But
I had a source tell me that it has arrived, but is very kind of cloak and dagger, and sources and mystery.
Yeah, look, to answer your question, I think at the core of the issue for us around the merger was the challenge of being a mixed funding model. And what did that really mean? And there was a lack of articulation, you know, right up until prior to Christmas around, you know, how that would actually turn up, in the sense that, you know, TVNZ in particular, as the commercial arm, wouldn't be empowered and emboldened even further to take more revenue unfairly out of the market. Equally, we needed TVNZ to stay strong as a commercial player in the market. So quite an interesting position.
That is a tension.
But we'd never seen any sort of concrete detail around how that was going to turn up. So that was always an issue for us. And, you know, the challenge around potential market distortions that that could create in a small market like New Zealand. Now, in terms of whether or not this happens or not, now, obviously, in the year, and you ask the question, what does the alternate look like? Well, I think, first of all, I'd say New Zealand On Air needs to be strengthened again. I think that the challenge with New Zealand On Air losing a large sum of money didn't just hurt, wasn't just problematic for our business. I think it was problematic for the entire sector. And we think New Zealand On Air can play a really strong role in terms of, the creator community more broadly here in New Zealand, and providing, you know, much further surety around, you know, output of content in the long term. And they should be playing a central role, actually, given their kind of foundation documents of why they exist, right? They can be playing an absolutely central role for government to make sure that the right audiences are being served, the right platforms are being served, and we're keeping New Zealand voices alive. We think that's really, really important. They're well-placed to do it. We always felt they were well-placed to do it because we felt that the merged entity couldn't necessarily act in isolation of your business or our business, that also might be wanting to create things that we felt were in the public good. We felt we all could play a role in that. And New Zealand On Air, we think, needs to be topped up to help enable that in the future. I think some of the challenges that, depending on your perspective, being poorly or unpoorly articulated around the challenges of, audiences and or revenue, they don't go away. They stay, the trend of, traditional, radio audience moving to digital, those trends are going to continue. As you've pointed out, the trends of traditional revenue streams and linear free-to-air TV channels, they're not going away. They're with us. And so the government will still need to respond to that in some way. I think that RNZ probably needs is a place that very clearly operates well under a charter today. I think it could do with a top up of funding because I think it could do more as an entity. I think that would be a good thing. And then I think the interesting thing is what will happen with TVNZ. And as I said, we're in this interesting position where we need TVNZ to stay strong as a commercial player to hold up the value of the broadcast video advertising market in New Zealand. Equally, we don't want to see them artificially emboldened that could hurt the industry. And so remains to be seen exactly what the government will do in that space.
I know that you've to a certain extent repudiated your predecessor Michael Anderson's position, which was quite an aggressive stance against the way that TVNZ was operating in the local market. But do you see, and obviously notwithstanding the critique of the mixed model, do you see the continued sort of not-for-profit status of TVNZ set against, your own business, Sky's business, being, needing to return a commercial return? Do you still see that as being something that is a fundamental kind of unfairness within the market, particularly given that the only reason they can do that is because they've got a beneficial owner in the government that is allowing them to trade in a way that is quite unconventional for a fully commercial entity?
Look, it's certainly a distortion. It's a decision for the government to make in terms of how they want to run with that. And the reason I say it's a distortion is it's different from, ourselves, NZME, MediaWorks, yourself, others who do have that commercial imperative to get a return. And so we do think about, decisions differently as a result of that. I think one of the things that, is an interesting thought and something that we put in our submission is, could those commercial returns actually be used to bolster New Zealand On Air, rather than direct to Treasury, could those commercial returns benefit the sector more broadly? So we'd love to see more of that type of collaborative thinking go on if possible.
Let's talk briefly about the advertising market. The words "cool your jets" left Adrian Orr's lips in late November. Basically, everyone sort of started to act like a recession was coming. You know, on some level, you know, he's freely admitted that that was his intention. Advertising is notoriously one of the first areas that gets hit in that respect. What's the and going into an already challenged sector that's faced years of different types of challenge and decline. What's it like out there in the local market from your perspective?
Yeah, I think you're right. The advertising sector is in many ways a bellwether for the broader economy in terms of what's to come. And if I just go back actually a year, you know, we were seeing for the first half of last year really strong performance. We felt really emboldened coming out of, you know, a deep Auckland lockdown. We felt that, you know, the economy was tracking well and was certainly favourable to the advertising industry. In the second half of the year, we started to see the signals that, you know, the slowdown was coming and the challenges were coming, and that is absolutely flowing into 2023 for all players, I think. And so I think, you know, as we move into this period of uncertainty around what's going to happen with the economy, I think, you know, the challenges of, you know, less discretionary income at home mean more advertiser uncertainty or willingness to commit. So all of these things put pressure on the sector. And so for us, what that means is that, you know, we've got to be really disciplined around the decisions that we do make. And equally, you know, as I've mentioned before, we've got to think about how do we diversify our business so that we're not all in on just one income stream being advertising.
Do you think, I mean, there's been a number of major media companies, sitting aside even the technology companies, which have announced waves of redundancies in the US over the past few weeks. Do you think that falls into the category of an inevitability in the local market?
Well, certainly we've got no plans along those lines at the moment. I can't comment on the others. I think one of the benefits that we've had over the last couple of years, even though working through two large global integrations in 2 years has challenges for sure. What it has done is made us, I think, really efficient and lean already. So, you know, we never anticipated the year that, you know, 2023 could be. But I think as a result of the work we have done, we're in actually a really strong position going into 2023. So as I said, we have no plans. But would I be surprised to see it across the sector? No, I wouldn't.
Now, this has obviously been largely focused on the business side, but late this afternoon, I record an episode of the other podcast I co-host, The Real Pod, which is consumed with reality TV, which Three has been historically a big broadcaster of. The Block had a pretty interesting sort of finale, which led in fairly short order to its hiatus and replacement with House Rules. Obviously, this is on some level, you know, not your specialty area, though it is something you oversee. But do you see that the local reality, I mean, and Discovery is a big broadcaster of reality worldwide. Warner Brothers makes a lot of it. Do you, what do you see as the sort of evolution of the sector, and particularly in a local context?
So first of all, just to talk to The Block quickly. So really tough decision to make. You know, it's a juggernaut of a franchise for us, does incredibly well. It just seemed that it would have been a poor decision to continue to make that show in the current environment.
It's basically only operated an upmarket for
yeah.
comedy.
You know? Well, yeah, that's true. But it would have been poor for everyone, right? I mean, despite the economics of the show, you know, you want the contestants to have the best possible outcome as well, right? That is a large part of the success of the show and the jeopardy that occurs at the end. You don't want everyone going into it knowing it's going to be a bad outcome. It doesn't work terribly well.
Like your cast might not be the same quality you might see too.
Yeah. Absolutely, I'm committed to reality formats. That won't go away. I think that's a really core tenet of free-to-air television around the world. One of the points of difference that it is a home of reality. We continue to bring and try to bring new formats, new reality formats to screen. And so we're constantly scouring the world, you know, whether that's through the combined Warner Brothers Discovery Network or through other production houses to find what we think can work. And we're bringing some of those formats to screen This year, you know, I've got couples therapy coming in. We've got traitors coming in, which I reckon you might quite like that one. So
it's a very good thing.
Yeah. Looks really great. So we're constantly trying to bring new formats to find out what will stick and resonate with New Zealanders. We're fortunate that we are part of a global network that we have access to see a lot of these shows and formats and understand what is working. Equally, you know, you've seen a pretty big commitment to us from scripted drama and comedy this year. And that is always a challenge for free-to-air networks because, you know, back to our earlier conversation, often a lot of the home of scripted drama these days sits in a streaming universe. And so we've got some really important formats coming to New Zealand this year that we think we can do a job both on free-to-air and on 3Now. And interestingly, with some of those scripted drama formats, increasingly we're talking to our counterparts globally at HBO Max and HBO to go, actually, can these formats travel globally? So what we originate here in New Zealand, can we tell these stories around the world? And so that's going to become an increasingly important part of our business model moving forward. And again, we're kind of unique in New Zealand compared to a lot of other markets around the world where we do have such large, strong, and highly capable production capacity, you know, emanating out of the business here. So yeah, really excited actually about the content future.
Yeah, and yeah. That's sort of super exciting for the local kind of creator and production sector to know that you're not just selling to a local house. There's an ability for that to travel through just Warner Brothers Discovery there. Just quickly, related, you know, in terms of the appointment viewing thing is sports, and you obviously had a pretty extraordinary result with the Rugby World Cup last year, which must have been quite, you know, just to feel the heat from it, see the numbers come in, must have been quite extraordinary, and just sitting aside the actual emotion of the events themselves and the quality of the games. But does that, and again, Discovery has significant sports rights interests in other territories. We just saw Spark Sport exit the market. TVNZ picked that up. You know, is there a world where there is a rehoming of more sports within 3 and on free-to-air? And given that you saw such extraordinary results out of that Rugby World Cup rights situation?
Yeah, well, first of all, shout out to the Black Ferns. That was an extraordinary – I was actually in Tokyo where I watched the final. You know, slightly disappointed but excited to be on my own watching that. It was quite a moment. And not just for the Black Ferns, but of course, you know, what a job that tournament did to reset actually the outlook on women's sports rights generally, I think, which is a really good thing. I think what that tournament did in particular was show the strength of free-to-air and what it can do for sport. And I think those conversations, I've got no doubt, are happening with rights holders, you know, all over the place to think about what is the role of free-to-air. And how does it provide a role to get greater exposure? From our perspective, look, I've been clear about this for, you know, a couple of years now. New Zealand is a challenge market. It's small. And your ability to get a return on what is globally inflationary pressure on sports rights is a real challenge. And I think, you know, I wasn't necessarily overly surprised to see Spark leave the market because, again, the pressure in a small market to get a return is tough. So we've always said that the role we can play is in partnership with others where, you know, the sport requires the free-to-air exposure, particularly of our audience, right, which is different from a TVNZ audience, where we get that right, and equally where the partner feels the benefit that they're getting you know, the exposure back through to their platform.
It's almost like a freemium model for rights.
Yeah, and I think that is the model for us in New Zealand. And, you know, we've done a number of things now, right? We did the Women's Rugby World Cup, which is, you know, being well reported on. But, you know, we've done things in rugby league over the last 12 months with State of Origin, you know, a number of motorsport events. We just obviously had the Joseph Parker fight at the weekend and disappointing fight from my opinion, just saying, but anyway. But, you know, we will continue to do this. We'll continue to find those partnerships that make sense. But no, we don't have plans to invest outright in sports rights in the New Zealand market.
So just finally, I want to talk a little bit about your MediaWorks, which three was once a part. And, you know, like this time a year ago, there was quite a bitter dispute between Tova O'Brien, who's previously a real icon of the three whānau and News Hub. You know, did that you know, do you think that you know, with hindsight, that unfolded the way that it needed to? And how would you also characterize the current state of relations with, what was formerly, I can't tell whether it's like an ex relationship or a sibling relationship.
Well, obviously MediaWorks, owned the business and sold the television business to Discovery and subsequently merged with Warner Brothers Discovery. So it's not a sibling relationship, right? It is, there is no formal relationship between the two companies anymore.
Exes then.
We're exes. But certainly Cam and I speak often, actually, and try to align around the things that matter at an industry level, and often chat about, the state of the industry. So I would say at that level, the relationship is certainly strong, and, we are, it's very important to our operating model, no different from sport, actually, that we have really strong partners in the market where we can do things together. And certainly we see MediaWorks as being, one of those partners. Look, as far as Tova's concerned, look, she's an incredible broadcaster. Every situation when someone leaves a business has its own set of rights around employment agreements and different things. And, certainly that played out very publicly. But, I still think that Tova is an incredibly talented broadcaster. I think she's doing a really stellar job on Today FM, and certainly wish her well.
Fair play. All right. Hey, thanks so much, Glenn, for coming on The Fold today. It's such an interesting sector, and so much of it is embodied in Warner Brothers Discovery. So I look forward to watching and talking more over the balance of the year.
Yeah. Thanks, Duncan.
The Fold is brought to you by the Spinoff Podcast Network. It's hosted by Duncan Grieve, with production by Tiahe Butler and Samuel Robinson. Series production is by Jane Yee.
That was The Fold, brought to you by our partners at oOh!media, making brands unmissable and public spaces better across Aotearoa. Huge thanks to oOh!media for sponsoring this episode of The Fold and enabling us to make unmissable connections with Kiwis.
Kia ora e te iwi, Tiahe Butler here, podcast manager at The Spinoff. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spinoff member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
The Spinoff Podcast Network.